from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. In celebration of Super Bowl weekend, we'll open up today's show by taking a look at the Indiana State Museum's exhibit of Jim Irsay's collection of guitars, scrolls, and more.
And then I'll get to sit down and chat with performer, comedian, writer, commentator, and fringer Phil Van Hest, also known as Phil the Void. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar that we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR.
Chaos is a friend of mine. No, it's not a description of the mantra you'll need for Indianapolis traffic this weekend. It's the name of an exhibit of Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay's collections, and you can see it at the Indiana State Museum now through May 6th. Sharon Gamble invited curator Dale Ogden and communications manager Kathy Moore to come in and tell us more.
Dale, over the years, you have curated some very serious exhibitions, and I understand it was a little bit of a lark to work with Mr. Irsay on Chaos is a Friend of Mine.
Yeah, this one's been a lot of fun. I don't know that there's any serious academic overtones associated with this particular project, but as you say, I get enough of that on a day-to-day basis. This has been high entertainment for me.
What do we know about how he got started collecting?
Well, he got started collecting the same way pretty much any All-American boy in the 1960s got collected. He collected baseball cards.
Okay.
And that just one thing led to another.
Which he still has.
Which he still has,
that he gave to his daughter, and she went, "Why do I want these?"
Aww.
I collected baseball cards in a...
Do you still have them?
Actually, in one of those moments when I was living in the basement of an abandoned house and living out of my car and whatever else, I think I sold them for... about $150, I think, which
probably
was huge money.
Probably kept food on the table for a while.
Sold them for a cheeseburger.
So from baseball cards to what's the saying? The difference between men and boys is the price of their toys.
The price of their toys, absolutely, absolutely.
It clearly qualifies.
And as a grown-up collector, where did it start?
I think probably where he really got serious about his collecting was in guitars, in musical instruments. There's some people around who think they're musicians, but maybe shouldn't be.
Uh-huh.
Jim Irsay is, I would say, a serious musician. He's a serious guitar player. He took classical guitar lessons for quite some time. And he sat in with the likes of Stephen Stills and John Mellencamp and quite a few other people. He knows what he's doing around a guitar, not just in the guitar as an instrument, but as a piece of machinery. He knows the craftsmanship behind guitars. He knows what makes a good guitar and what makes just a off-the-rack guitar. So he's got a real appreciation for the musical instrument itself, in addition to being a fan of Bob Dylan and some other people that he sees as being the philosophers of his generation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think guitars is probably where he really started getting serious about collecting.
Tell us about this Tiger guitar.
Oh, yeah. Tiger's one of the more famous guitars, I think, probably in rock and roll history. There aren't too many. It's kind of like Madonna or Cher. there aren't too many guitars who go by their first name. I think a lot of people would recognize Lucille. B.B. King's famous guitar,
mm-hmm.
And there are a few others, but Tiger is in very select company when it comes to being an instrument that's recognized by its name. Tiger was played by Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead beginning in the late 1970s. It was handmade For Garcia.
It's a beautiful guitar.
It's a beautiful piece of work.
Isn't it Tiger Maple? Is that where the Tiger originally came from? Well, and then it has an inlaid Tiger on it, too.
Yeah, a little bit of both, yeah. The Tiger, there's a gold inlaid Tiger both on the front and then the stylized on the back.
Hmm.
And it's really a beautiful piece of craftsmanship. And then the Grateful Dead, there's actually a kind of a lineage here. Mr. Irsay got interested in the Beat Generation, Jack Kerouac and Ginsberg and those folks, and that eventually led to Ken Kesey and Hunter Thompson and the writers, the counterculture writers of the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and the Grateful Dead kind of spanned that period. And so he got interested in, I think the Grateful Dead is sort of the musical version of Jack Kerouac and Hunter Thompson. So there's more connection there than there might seem on the surface.
Yeah, the title Chaos is a Friend of Mine, which is attributed to Bob Dylan, suggests
right.
that it's very random, but you've just put a schematic to the core of the collection here.
Yeah, I think so. It's we love the title. It might be my favorite title of an exhibition I've ever worked on.
Titles are hard, too. They
yeah.
are really hard to right. come up with.
Right.
But his collecting has become very... He's an eclectic collector. He's kind of all over the board. He's interested in history.
The radical side of history.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, he's interested in Thomas Paine, I think, and Jefferson and Washington as revolutionaries. He's also interested in Abraham Lincoln, which I would say is a little maybe less revolutionary. But he is interested in American history in particular. Obviously, he's interested in football. It goes without saying. What kind of ties all these together, I think, is the concept of chaos. You know, the revolutionaries managed the chaos of a revolution. Abraham Lincoln managed the chaos of a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
Football is, by any account, organized chaos. Peyton Manning is successful because of his ability to manage what would seem to be an utterly chaotic situation.
Hmm.
You have somebody like Dwight Freeney who plays on defense, and the whole point of the defense on football team is to create chaos. Dwight Freeney is probably one of the greatest examples who's ever played the game in terms of creating chaos.
You're the perfect curator for this show. I happen to know that you have a very serious sports side to
you.
And boy, that's just coming perfectly together there.
You put rock and roll and the American Revolution and football and the Beat Generation and the Grateful Dead, and the word chaos just kept coming up and kept coming
mm-hmm,
up.
Mm-hmm. Normally you hear museum and collection and people think, oh, temperature controlled room, white
yeah.
gloves. That may not be the case with all of the items in this exhibit.
Yeah, we're doing the best that we can. I mean, we have our standards to live up to,
sure.
whether, you know, regardless of the project. So we're going far beyond, I think, what... he would normally expect and what some collectors would normally expect. But I'd not be entirely truthful if I didn't say that we were making some compromises in this exhibition. But we've worked very hard to maintain light levels and temperature control and humidity and the things that we normally look to. There's a real difference between a collector and a museum. And it's our responsibility to be a museum first and foremost. We work with collectors all the time, and we try to accommodate collectors, but it's a line that I think any museum in this day and age walks.
Mm-hmm. Well, this exhibition is showing up in a brand new gallery at the museum, previously called the Whipple Trestle Bridge, now housing a gallery, because the bridge between the two museum buildings that goes over the canal, which
uh-huh.
is all glass and steel,
right.
has now been walled in. So it is
wow.
a linear gallery. Isn't that a good word? A linear gallery.
That works.
Cool.
And the reason that we had to do that is because of this 120-foot scroll that is the manuscript of On the Road, because we did want to unfurl it to its entirety, which is one of the just couple of times in history.
I think this may be
been...
the second time it's ever been displayed, and that's what
right.
That's what I mean by I say we make concessions. Would we normally, you know, wall in a glass bridge to display an exhibition? That's not typical of what we do. But on the other hand, this is the History Channel is at the museum this week to shoot video of the scroll and its installation as one of the 100 most important cultural artifacts in American history. So the ability for an institution, a historic institution, to be able to show that in its entirety, you do what you need to do in order to make that kind of object available
sure.
to the general public.
That piece alone is breathtaking, and you know yeah. that if you see nothing else in the exhibition, it's just stunning.
I remember reading Kerouac when I was in college and thinking that he was just ridiculously derivative. And then I realized recently that, no, it was everybody else.
It
was the other way around. Yeah, he established the...
He was the first anti-establishment person, wasn't he? I mean, he was a hippie before hippies. He was a beatnik before beatniks.
Mm-hmm.
He really was so anti-establishment or something, right?
In the popular culture, I guess, yeah, there have been some anti-establishment people that have come and gone. in terms of the popular culture, he was definitely one of the first who became successful going against the grain, you know, mm-hmm. say, going out of his way to antagonize and annoy people.
Speaking of raising eyebrows, I understand that there's a particularly famous issue of Playboy in this collection.
Sure, yeah. It's as I say, Mr. Irsay's collecting has become more eclectic as he's gone along. He's diverged from guitars and football uniforms, and I wanted to show the sort of the breadth of what he's put together, so people know that it's not just a guitar and football. It's not a Colts exhibition. It's not a rock and roll exhibition.
Sure.
It's about this famous Indiana collector and the things that have caught his attention over the last 20 or 30 years. So we have some odds and ends, some Andy Warhol material, a poem that was written by Vincent van Gogh, Austin Powers glasses from the Austin Powers movies.
That's how I'm getting my 18-year-old to come
one
to
of these
me.
Things
yeah.
is not like just, the other.
Yeah, very much. So he also collected the first issue of Playboy, which featured Marilyn Monroe both as the on the cover and as the first centerfold. He's got a great joke about that. They asked him what he would say about that magazine.
In a tweet,
and his response was, "I swear to God, Mom, I have no idea how it got under my bed."
That was his 140-character tweet.
So, you know, hopefully, you know, there is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek aspect to this whole exhibition, more so than, as you say, some of the much more serious work I've done over the course of my career.
There's nothing wrong with fun.
I don't think so either. If we can't have fun during these upcoming weeks, then I think we need to have our heads examined.
Sharon Gamble with the Indiana State Museum's Dale Ogden and Kathy Moore. You can see Chaos is a Friend of Mine, Cultural Icons from the Jim Irsay Collection, at the Indiana State Museum through May 6th. Check out exhibit curator Dale Ogden's blog at indianastatemuseum.wordpress.com. And again, Dale Ogden's blog at indianastatemuseum.wordpress.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
So right now, there's probably lots of people from New York and Boston who are listening to this show going, what is this fantastic arts show that Indianapolis has to offer.
We can only hope.
And so I just wanted to explain it to like those new listeners who may not know exactly what we do, because each week, you know, we have a couple different interviews in arts and culture, and then we also have this very special calendar thing that we call
What'll We Do?
That's right. So
Touchdown Edition.
The super edition of What'll We Do? And What'll We Do is where we get to chat about all the cool things that are coming up in the next few weeks that people should be doing in arts and culture in our city, giving them some ideas. And the thing is, though, if you're here from Boston or New York, you're probably going home Monday, so a lot of this won't apply to you, but more reasons for you to come back soon.
But maybe you traveled with somebody who's not interested in watching the game.
Oh!
Heresy, I know. But
what?
Just in case...
What will they do?
What will they do? Well, actually, if you like visual art and just the dazzle of spectacle...
Yes.
I think you should check out, and I know you recently did this, and I'm doing it this weekend, TURF, the Idada
awesome.
Art Pavilion. Just quick run through what your favorite parts of TURF for?
You know, I think Greg Hall's installation is probably one of the best ones I saw, but also Nick Altman, his work. And I'll tell you about those just very briefly. But basically, you've got about, I don't know, maybe 30 or so artists, local artists, who have all been given space in the building that at one point was our city hall, our state museum, a library, and it's a beautiful building anyway. But each of them have been, these artists have been given spaces where they've created installations. The installations have nothing to do with football or the Super Bowl or turf at all, other than the fact that it's just really cool and taking place all
the
time.
And it's on our turf here.
And it's on our turf
here. It's at Ohio in Alabama, eminently walkable, so if you're downtown, it's free. If you're downtown, pop in there. That only is open through this Sunday, Super Sunday.
Right, and it's open till 7 o'clock every night. There is food there. They have sort of a cafe, and this is all put on by IDOTA, which is the Downtown Artists and Art Dealers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And but definitely check out the bridge that goes over this cool sort of collection of a waterfall created through TV screens
Ooh.
That Greg Hall's put together. And then Nick's piece is this great refrigerator that's fallen through a ceiling into the floor to create a coffee table.
Oh, I'm excited also, about the action most motivated
Jeff
Jeff Martin's nightlight.
The light piece that is so much fun. Yeah, my in-laws love that. They played in that room forever.
Are they still there?
They could be. You never
okay.
know. So definitely check out TURF. The other art-related thing for this weekend for Super Bowl weekend is if you're checking out the Huddle, which is the indoor space to get warm and have some drinks and food in the first floor of what was the old Nordstrom building. They also have an exhibit there of Charles Fazzino's work. And Charles Fazzino is an artist who does these sort of cartoony, cool things that he creates, these great, beautiful, colorful illustrations that are then printed and then cut up and reassembled to create these sort of 3D pieces, all in limited editions. And he's done a number of Indy 500 posters as well as Super Bowl posters for about the past dozen years. And they've got those on display as well as one of his original creations for this year's Super Bowl, which is a great sort of features the city and Lucas Oil, and it's definitely worth checking out. Charles Fazzino, very cool artist.
Excellent. If you
not
have,
local, but really neat guy, and I actually used to
right.
work for him about 16 years ago.
Cool.
Yeah.
If you happen to be online, or maybe you're playing with your smartphone right now, maybe you're multitasking, listening to us playing with your smartphone, you may not know that Indianapolis has a rich music tradition. You might live here and not know this, by the way. And there's this great 46 Indie Music Project. If you go to 46, that's XLVI-musicproject.com, XLVI-musicproject.com, you can hear samples of our music scene from jazz to hip-hop, big band, classic rock, alt, country, you name it. It's been written and performed here in Indianapolis. So that's a great thing to do. Maybe you've been down to hear the bands at the NFL Experience. Maybe you want to hear more about local music in Indianapolis.
Very good. Very good. There's a lot of great art openings going on this weekend. If by chance you're still listening to us on Friday evening, then down in Fountain Square, there's a lot of cool exhibits. We talked about the one at Upland Brewing with Justin Vining, as well as the exhibit...
In the propaganda room.
In the propaganda room, that's right. Also, check out Out of Line, featuring the work of Gene Alexander Frater, and this is in the Space Camp Gallery, which is the smallest gallery in town. That's the tiny little gallery that Flounder Lee operates down there in the Murphy Building. Spalding, and he's got a new exhibit that's going on right now, sort of inspired by conceptual art of the 60s and 70s. And then there's also at Harrison Center, there's a new exhibit, the Super Ball, and then at Wug LeCou's studio and garage space over at the Circle Center Industrial Complex, Friday night is the big opening of the Da Vinci Project's new exhibit with Melissa Gallen on harp, and that's also just a great space to check out.
Very
if you missed
exciting.
Them Friday,
loved
then
your interview.
A lot of
yeah.
those, thank you. There's a lot of those galleries are open, of course, throughout the weekend as well, worth checking out.
And you don't even have to walk into a gallery or an art space to see art in Indianapolis. This is true at any time, but especially true now with the completion of the 46 for 46 mural project.
So cool.
Keep an eye out all around town. Most of the artists are local. Some of the themes of the artwork are local, and these range from banners to artworks like the Medusa on Mass Ave that around about East Street that covers the entire site of a building, to the three-story tall portrait of Kurt Vonnegut on the side of the building that houses the Chatterbox.
That's right.
Yeah.
It looks strangely like our friend Claude McNeil. But
you haven't seen them in the same room, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and speaking of theater, some great theater going on this weekend. Hey, current economic conditions continues at the Phoenix Theater this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, and then next weekend as well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Definitely worth checking out. Very, very funny show featuring some great actors in town. Jen Alexander, Charles Goad, John Michael Goodson, Cindy Phillips, Bill Simmons, Maria Souza.
Eglin,
thank you, Sharon. Anyways, definitely worth checking out some great local theater.
Speaking of fun theater, Lend Me a Tenor is the new Booth Tarkington Civic Theater show.
That's right.
It's a classic farce. There's disaster, denial, recovery, complication, and catastrophe, and yet it's funny. The Cleveland Grand Opera Company faces imminent ruin when its star is accidentally given an overdose of tranquilizers and is unable to perform. And of course, there's an aspiring singer who enters the scene and saves the day, but with all sorts of complications along the way. So if you're looking for something fun and frothy, and who isn't in this time of
fun
year?
And frothy.
Fun and frothy. Check out Lend Me a Tenor at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel.
If you're part of a group that like to bend and snap its way to the
what?
Beef and Boards.
Oh.
Beef and Boards, Great Dinner Theater, is putting on a production of Legally Blonde, the Broadway musical, and they are giving groups, local groups, a chance to get in on the fun by winning tickets to the show by creating a bend and snap. You got it, Sharon? Bend and snap. Thank you. You can do your bend and snap move on video through the show. They're having the contest. Video entries are due by February 17th to win tickets for your group to go to the show. I'm not even sure what that means.
I worry.
I bet if you go to their website at Beef and Boards and click on Bend and Snap, they'll explain it all to you.
I saw Legally Blonde the movie, but I admit I haven't seen the musical, so maybe there's a reference there you and I are both missing.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to finding out. Maybe we should submit a bend and snap.
I'm seeing it now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm. I'll bend, you snap.
La, 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 la. We seem to be on kind of a fun kick here today. Art is not always fun, but today it seems to be super fun. Coming up later this month, I just couldn't help it, later this month on Saturday, February 25th, it is a marathon. It's called a Laugh-a-thon. It's the fifth year in a row this has happened. Comedy Troupes, Indieprov, and Comedy Sports, both improv-based companies, perform 12, count 12 hours of improv to benefit 12 local and national charities.
Cool.
And the event is going to be held at Theater on the Square on Mass Ave from noon to midnight. That's on Saturday the 25th. There's a suggested, and here's something even better. It's a suggested donation. $5 for each hour, of course. If there's a charity you're especially fond of and you want to donate more than that, you can do that. And the recipients range from giving some to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, to Gleaners Food Bank, to the Humane Society, etc., etc., etc. You can find out more at indieprov.com. That's IndyProv.com.
Very good. Hey, it's all Greek to me. would be the title of Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's next big production, which is opening next weekend, starting February 10th, goes through the 26th. It is their annual cabaret-style show that are very popular with lots of good performance and refreshments and fun food. And this year, it is all Greek-based, with such classics as that big, fat Greek wedding piece in Greek mythology and the birth of the gods. And it is very limited seating because you get to basically like sit right on stage with the dancers. Very cool. It's always a good event, worth checking out, and it always sells out very quickly. Check out GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org for more information. And opa!
I see you bending and snapping, doing a little bit of dancing along with the Gregory Hancock Company. Hey, a reminder that that our friend Eric Grayson is doing a special talk at 5 o'clock on February 10th at the Toby about the history of color in the movies, starting with Maxwell's invention of color in photography. It's a demonstration with examples, a brief explanation of the color process, and you can see all kinds of examples, Kinemacolor, Cinecolor, Technicolor, Kodachrome, and Eastman color. The main feature that night at 7 o'clock is The Quiet Man with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara, plus a rare Technicolor cartoon. All of that on February 10th, starting at 5. They do ask you to call and register, and you can find out more information at the Indianapolis Museum of Art's website.
And that was a great interview you had with Eric last weekend. Very interesting.
Who knew color started so early?
Yeah, I found that really fascinating.
Yeah.
And if you ever want to check out, listener, one of our past recent broadcasts, you can always go to WFYI and then click on radio and local programs and Art of the Matter. And there's a link there to podcasts of our recent shows
that
you can check out. And you can check out Sharon's interview with Eric from last weekend. Something else I want to mention coming up Saturday, February 11th, a brand new storytelling series kicks off at Roberts Park United Methodist Church. That's right downtown on North Delaware Street, with a portion of the proceeds going to Soups On, which provides a weekly hot meal for people in need. The show starts at 7:30, and on the 11th, next Saturday, features stories from Howard Bowles, music from one of our favorites, Kara Jean Wallers, as well as Bill Price, and humor from comic Jeff Price, and poetry from Emily Zimmerman. Should be a lot of fun. So that is coming up next weekend at Roberts Park United Methodist Church on Delaware Street.
Speaking of storytelling, Miracles, Myths, Lyrics, and Lies, an evening with Krista Dieter, Philip Gully, Carrie Newcomer, and Scott Russell Sanders, is coming up. It's a little bit of a road trip, coming up on the 18th at 7:30 at the Royal Theater in Danville, Indiana. Danville, Indiana. What a great collection of wits and minds and creative spirits in one room. Miracles, Myths, Lyrics, and Lies. Danville, Indiana on the 18th, 7:30 p.m.
That sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, Sharon, there is, of course, plenty to do, such as watching that game tomorrow afternoon.
Wait, is
Sunday
has the clock...
Sunday afternoon, if you're listening to us on...
Is the clock running out on our arts calendar?
That clock is ticking away. We're already in overtime, Sharon.
Oh, my goodness.
For that arts calendar that we call...
What do we do?
But
we'll see you again next week
with an edition that is just as super,
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Phil Van Hest moved to Indianapolis from L.A. last spring after a number of years being a visitor here as part of the Indie Fringe with his show Fill the Void. Now he's making a living as a performer, comedian, writer, and commentator in Indianapolis, and Travis DiNicola sat down with Phil to find out what else besides the Super Bowl brought him here.
Phil, welcome to Art of the Matter.
Thank you, Travis. Before we start, actually, could you run me through a list of the words that I'm not allowed to say on the radio? Just list them. No?
I'm holding them up, can't you see?
Okay. Oh, no.
Yeah, right. Not that one either.
Well, this is probably going to be shorter than we both anticipated. Pardon me, do go on, sir.
Part of the reason I wanted to have you on, Phil, is that in addition to really enjoying the shows you've been doing, Fill the Void at the Fringe Theater, and have been impressed by the fact that not long after moving here in this past year, you're writing for Nuvo, writing for Indianapolis Monthly, doing a lot of other great work. 5-6 years ago, you did not live here. You probably had not even heard of the Indie Fringe Fest. And I want to just take a minute to sort of go back. Where were you before you had heard of Indie Fringe and first came here? Because you were part of the first Fringe, I believe.
Let's see. We might have to take this back to the last millennium. Nope. It was this millennium. Okay. It was definitely this millennium. I had graduated from college, and I had never heard of the Fringe, and I got a job touring with this three-man comedy troupe. I'm going to put that in air quotes, comedy troupe.
Yeah.
We performed at Renaissance festivals mostly. Our flagship show, which we performed here at the Indie Fringe, the inaugural Indie Fringe,
okay,
7 years ago, was called Testicles and the Sack of Rome.
Yeah.
Which is an exploration into the question, can a penis joke last a full 45 minutes? And the resounding yes is the answer to that. Yes, it can. And that's where I discovered Fringe festivals, Canada, Australia. And when things didn't work out with that group...
So Indie Fringe was your first Fringe then? Your first
no,
exposure
I'd been
to
Canada
Fringe?
Before.
Okay,
and
but
we
it was
stopped
part
through
of that.
Indie Fringe as if, like, well, we don't have anything else better to do.
Yeah.
Does anyone know where Indianapolis is? No, but we don't have to. You just buy a ticket and then the airplane takes you there. So I couldn't point it out to you on a map for a couple of years. But the first year that we came here, we had such a great host mom and that I came back the next year because I knew I'd have a hammock and some cats. And that's really why I came back, because we didn't have a great financial time at the first Fringe. But I came back the second year because I knew I'd have a nice place to stay. And the weather was so temperate. And then I just came back the third year, and then I did really well by myself. And then I've just been back every year since. I forget if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it does to some extent. But so you were doing, in air quotes, a comedy show. You were doing stand-up. You were writing. You were doing other things. You were living out in L.A. Certainly continuing to come back because of the great hammocks and cats and weather, but not necessarily with the intent of landing here in Indy?
No. It never occurred to me to move here at all. In fact, people would mention it in passing, like, oh, you should move here. And I would laugh. I'd laugh. And I would gaily toss my hair and say, oh, you silly fool. Yes, of course, move here. What a capital idea. Sorry, that was my little voiceover audition. Hello, I'm Phil Van Hest. Do you need to sell something with this? Because I'll let you. What was the point of that? So no, I had no intention of moving here whatsoever. And then last year, my girlfriend and I were tired of Los Angeles. We were done. I had a job as a scenic carpenter at a university, and I didn't want to... You know what it was? I got my Social Security slip, like a receipt.
There's a summary of what you've been...
The summary. And it said, if you keep working at this job for the next 35 years, you can retire with an $1,100 a month pension. And I thought, that's not worth it. Let's get out of here and do something else. And our options kind of were San Francisco, where I have a lot of friends and family, or Indianapolis. And we didn't want to move to another big city. And Noelle had been out here with me a couple of times. We'd met so many people. We'd had such a nice time. The living was easy. There was such a lot of support for the kind of work that I was doing. And I don't know why people appreciated the shows that I do as much here. Los Angeles, I think maybe if you get up there and do a show about how, I don't know, there's more of a progressively liberal bent, everyone kind of claps in a, yes, we were pretty much thinking that sort of way. But out here, I've attracted a really, really committed group of people who feel maybe like they're an oppressed minority in this political
climate. And that what you're doing
is
somehow unique and subversive, even.
Yeah, and I'm willing to stand up there and say it with a straight face as if it is reality, which I believe it to be. So I feel like maybe there was a greater appreciation for this kind of work in this area. So we moved to Indianapolis so I could pursue a career in show business.
And what is really kind of interesting to me is that it's worked out for you. I mean, now, before we went on the air, we were talking about this, and you were saying how you were talking with a friend of yours about this, that you know, you'd been trying so hard in one of the hardest cities to make a career out of show business in Los Angeles, and you sort of brought those same skills and that tenacity to Indianapolis, where maybe the, you know, it resonated more.
It was that, and it was also my complete antipathy towards the concept of making a living as a performer in Los Angeles, in which the standard model involves commercial acting.
Yeah.
And I had this recurring nightmare that I was going to be offered $80,000 to put something in my mouth and go, And I just couldn't handle it. I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to, and that's the route you follow. Everyone does that. The most respected people in the business go that route, and I just couldn't get over that hurdle.
A friend of mine from college and I went to school for theater who ended up doing quite well doing that exact thing for some cupcake commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Made a great living off of it for a while.
I eventually decided not to hold it against my friends who did manage it. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to write these sort of esoteric, you know, cultural piercing monologues that would entertain people while educating them, or maybe opening their eyes to a new version of thinking about an issue that they had never comprehended before. And I learned some lessons from some of my favorite observational comics, like Bill Hicks, who got very depressed towards the end of his career because he felt like people would come to his shows and laugh but not learn, or come away from the shows not having, like, how would you follow up on this? So I would hand out bibliographies at the shows, so if someone heard something that
they wanted to look up, they could,
this is where I got it.
Which I thought was one of the coolest things about the first time I saw one of your shows. And now your shows, I mean, you know, they were selling out at the Fringe. You know, now Fringe is only, you know, 2 weeks out of the year. And, you know, but now you've brought not just, you know, that show, but you're doing a number of other things still through the Fringe as well.
Heck yeah, Travis.
Yeah, I mean, all the time. Yeah, which is a good thing. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, you're writing for Nuvo, you're writing for Indianapolis Monthly. Do you see yourself as a writer first or as a performer first?
I was a performer first who didn't want to keep saying other people's words. So I had to write my own. I saw a guy do a show in Winnipeg, and he had a huge following and, you know, a sold-out 300-seat house. And I watched him do his thing, and I thought, is that it? Well, I could do that. And as with most times when you ask yourself the question, how hard could this be, then you find out. And I've been finding out how hard it is for the last 7 years, but each year it's a little bit more rewarding than it is difficult, so I've kept going with it. But I've, now that I've done so much writing, I've written 6 full-length 60-minute monologues, not including all the random little stand-up pieces here and there.
Yeah.
So I've done enough writing that people have just approached me about it. Like, the editor at Indianapolis Monthly came up to me after one of my shows and was very demure and adorable as he handed me his card and said, "It's only print. I don't know if you're interested." So, and then Nuvo's been reviewing me for so long, I've gotten to know the arts and education. What are they called? Arts and culture? Whatever it is that they do over there, I've gotten to know them. And they approached me about doing some writing, and it never occurred to me that I was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just the skill that I used
to accomplish
the...
Yeah.
So I guess it's one of those byproducts of performance that has developed over the years.
So let's go back to the performance part. Help me understand how you understand what is different between the monologues that you write and stand-up comedy.
All right, Travis. I will be happy to walk you through this.
Step one.
Transition, arc, and meaning. I'm just making this up. Stand-up, I've noticed, doesn't have to begin or end anywhere. It's a series of non-related things that are joined by the loosest of transitions, like, and then my mom fell down the entire flight of stairs. Speaking of internet porn, and then you move into that section. Now, that's a great transition. To anyone listening, don't take that with mine. But it's an example of how you don't really need one. You don't need a common theme. So all of my shows have had a theme and a larger message that I try very hard, and I try to make the effort not look so effortful at getting across. Nature Abhors a Vacuum was about how the more time you spend filling up your mind's body and soul with emptiness, anything from calories to vapid entertainment, this is not nature's way. This is not the way humans were supposed to be. If you just become empty, you're going to feel bad.
Was that the show that, I'm just trying to remember, that had the line in about there are no straight lines in nature?
If it is, you have a better memory than I.
Okay. It stuck with me. Anyway, so.
Well, I hope I said it then.
It was a great line.
Comedy Over Quality was a bit about the excessive use of any one thing renders it kind of meaningless, and I applied that to communications and, you know, the text-based generations. You know, we do a lot more communicating, but at what cost? I would argue content and meaning. And then the Great Brain Robbery was just about internet, and this is kind of dated at this point, but it was about how, you know, the more tasks you assign to your computer, the worse off your brain will be at doing them. And I see this happening to myself. You know, I wouldn't have remembered to come here if it wasn't on my calendar, etc.
You're breaking my heart.
You're welcome. That's a service. That's a service, Travis, because now it'll grow back stronger, faster, better than before. And Love is a Battle Cat was about how that was my first one that involved an actual narrative arc where I fell in love with this cat and it changed my entire life. And that's a true story. And then the most recent one, Mother Banking Bank Holes, started out.
This was the one that you did last summer at the Fringe.
This was the most recent one. I did a 4-city tour with that one, the Midwest Fringe Circuit. And that one was the hardest one to write because it started out with a vague annoyance about the perceived, on my part, inequities of the current financial system and the annoyance of the ethereal nature of money. Like, people tell you how to calculate it, but not what it is or where it comes from or why we have this faith-based economic system and what it all means. So falling down that rabbit hole almost killed me. But
it seemed like you actually learned a lot.
I did.
In creating that piece.
I read hundreds of pages of just raw data trying to find jokes in them. It was horribly awkward. So I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but I guess you can bleep it out. As a sort of therapy, my next show for Fringe, and you heard it here first, folks.
All right.
Fill the Void, Demon Cock. And I'm going to have like a Mr. Rogers vest, and the photos will have me and my cat, and it's going to be very, very, you know, Vaseline lens and friendly. And on the surface, it'll be very crass and very sexual, but underneath, it'll have a lot to do with women's issues and what I feel to be real-life advice to men about how to be men towards women. I would like to advise them how to be men towards other men,
so
but I don't have as much experience.
Collaborative piece with Noelle?
She collaborates with everything that I do. There's not the words you're hearing right now have been pre-approved. She has her master's degree in creative writing and poetry, and she's a much, much more lucid editor than I am. I have huge problems with structure. I like to take the collage approach. I have a real nonlinear mosaic of words, but she will take those and point out that they would make more sense to more people if I put them in an order, if I cut some things. And this is very difficult for me to hear sometimes, you know?
Sure.
This part doesn't make any sense, and I'll just explode. Like, well, why don't you write it then? You know, so we've been working very hard on how to have a working relationship inside of our actual relationship. It seems that sorry, Noelle, I don't know if this is private or not, but we invented names for. Actually, it's going to be coming out in the documentary, so it's out of my hands already. And side note, there is a documentary that got made about myself and the Fringe this summer called On the Fringe.
Okay.
So opening in browsers near you any moment now, I'm sure. But so if I'm going to ask Noelle to help me at work on something, I'll address an email to her entitled, like, Dear Miss Hottie Bits. and sign off Mr. Funderpants, because this helps to keep the tone from
distance.
Getting serious.
Yeah.
You're like, no, this is other people's work we're
right.
discussing. I am merely the agent.
So along with the other work you're doing, I know you were also preparing to do some work with the opera, a number of other projects you have going on, reviews that you've been doing, and all those things are very cool and interesting. But I am curious more right now about, you know, so 9 months or so after moving to Indianapolis and your first winter here, which so far has been relatively mild by our standards.
Yeah, you know,
how's
about
it going
that,
for you?
About that, Travis. Everyone since I got here in April has been like, oh, April, huh? So you haven't lived through a winter yet. And I got to say, I don't know where the winter is yet, but I'm still waiting. And I hope it comes, because otherwise I'm just going to have no choice but to believe that everyone else is a total wuss.
Now, we are recording this on the 16th. So if we end up having
hopefully.
A blizzard by the time that the show airs, I'm
then
putting it on you.
Blamed on me, please. No, I feel like I've adjusted really well to the weather. For example, if I wake up and it's 20 degrees outside, I don't think, oh, it's cold. I think, oh, it's twice as warm as yesterday. And if it's raining, I don't wake up and go, oh, it's raining. I go, oh, it's warm out.
What else, though, about Indianapolis that maybe you didn't see as a visitor that you've discovered since you've been here?
You know, I knew people were nice when I visited out here.
Mm-hmm.
But I just assumed they were because it was a festival setting and I was not from here. But they're nice all the time. They're nice all the time, and they're also, I've been learning new degrees of the expansive potential for subtlety in politeness. And I'll give an example. Like,
please.
Well, one, and this is just, I'm going to hope to correct some behavior out there. There is something that can be counterproductive about politeness. If two people pull up to an intersection, a stop sign, four-way stop sign at the same time, the person on the right has the right of way. That is why it is called the right of way. Okay, guys? So if you are on the right, please do not wave on the guy on the left because he was just waiting for you to go because it was your turn. And by waving him on, you have now just inconvenienced both people. We could have both been through the intersection before this was all over. And one thing that I've appreciated conversationally is, like, for example, I have a copy of Nouveau here,
mm-hmm.
fine publication. And on the cover it says, wild ginger, good sushi in the Midwest. We couldn't even bring ourselves to say great. It was just like, look, you know, it's good. We don't want to go overboard with our adjective usage. I mean, we don't want to get people excited and riled up. It's the winter. Everyone's a little cold. And specifically, the use of the word good reminded me of this. I worked with another gentleman who was a fan of the show and
mm-hmm.
approached me and said, do you need work? And I said, yes. And he said, what can you do? And I said, not much. And he said, great, you'll be an apprentice builder. We're going to build a room addition on this house. Now I have carpentry skills, so that's fine. But we're standing in the room waiting for the drywall contractor who shows up, and he says, this is so-and-so. He's a great guy and a good drywall contractor. I had to point out to him later that maybe that was an awkward,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't see it that way. He's like, there's no such thing as a great drywall contractor. So
it's all about expectations.
It is about expectations. And if you expect to be disappointed, you never will be, which is not a philosophy I had to apply to Indianapolis. I expected great things and they are happening. I mean, really, I've been having a fine time. I mean, we glossed over some stuff, but for the first time in my life, I have my own monthly program.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to step on your toes, Travis.
No,
but
please,
I'm developing
jump in
it into a radio program.
I know you've been doing
that
sort of a radio format of your monthly show you've been doing at the Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I don't know where that's going to go or how, but that was the plan. And so far, so good. And I've gotten several jobs.
And you've been doing
out
interviews,
of it.
Right? As part
yeah,
of it.
I bring
yeah.
people on and interview them on Wednesday. The title of the show is God, Science, and the Blind Date of Destiny. And I have two doctors of theology from the Christian seminary on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the new developments with the Higgs boson particle that they're trying to find.
Mm-hmm.
At the,
Large the so-called
Hadron
God
Collider.
Particle. Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was called that goddamned particle
mm-hmm.
initially, and then it just got bowdlerized down to the God particle, which I thought was pretty hilarious. And we're going to talk about where God and science meet and if the two have to be incompatible. And if the Higgs boson is never found, this thing that completes the standard model of the physical world as we know it, if it's never found, will the scientific world divide into a group of people who believe and they have faith that it exists and the group that is pretty sure it doesn't? And I thought those kinds of questions were really interesting. And now I'll probably get dinged because the show is a local news comedy show, and technically this is not local news. But equally technically, the Higgs boson being universal applies everywhere, even in Indianapolis. So I'm hoping to get away with that. And the opera
If there
thing,
is such a particle, you would assume we have some here.
We would assume, yeah, they're probably not providing a special envelope around the town. But the opera thing came out of this show. This guy came to see the show. He liked what I did. He'd been hired to do video work for opera in the movies, which is officially going to be the biggest show I have ever done. I mean, I'm hosting it, but it's at Clues Hall, which seats $2,000, something like that.
Yep.
That will officially be the high point of the career. And now, of course, we'll step it up from there. But that is really exciting to me. And also the concept of opera in the movies, I feel like, will really bring a lot of people in who maybe feel like, you know, I feel like, especially me, let's not talk about other people, Travis. Let's talk about me, shall we, for a change? When I think about the opera, I always want to know more about it. But I always feel like there's so much to know, I don't know where to start. Operas have been used in movies for so long that it's a really great starting position for someone who wants to know more about opera, wants to seem like they know more about opera, but feels like they like it's just too much. We already know so much opera just from our exposure to films.
That we don't know we know.
That we don't know that we already know. So I'm really excited about pointing that out to a large group of well-dressed people.
Phil, I want to thank you for being on Art of the Matter today, and congratulations on taking advantage of Indianapolis for your own benefit.
Hey, take advantage of me, guys. I am here for you. Funnyaboutthat.com.
Travis DiNicola with Phil Van Hest. You can follow Phil at his blog, philthevoid.net. Find out about future shows at funnyaboutthat.com. The Indianapolis Opera's Opera Goes to the Movies, emceed by Phil, takes place on March 9th at Clues Hall, and, along with members of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, features scenes from Apocalypse Now, The Blues Brothers, Mrs. Doubtfire, and The Godfather. More information is at indieopera.org, and you'll hear more about that special concert in an upcoming Art of the Matter as well.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra, from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll get a preview of the Meet the Artists exhibit at the Central Library.
I'll talk with musician and writer David Bagdad about his new bluegrass album.
And I'll chat with Kevin Irving about the Butler Dance Festival. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call What'll we do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.